Startups grow in unpredictable ways, but your infrastructure shouldn't. Deel scales with you from employee one to employee 1,000. Deel's real-time payroll engine cuts weeks-long cycles down to minutes. And their global experts keep you compliant as you expand. Plus, startups can tap into perks like up to $25,000 in Deel credits and support programs designed specifically for high-growth teams. Deel is the fastest way to hire, manage, pay, and equip anyone, anywhere. Deel, your forever people platform. Visit deel.com/MOS to learn more and book a demo.
As your company scales, the hardest part isn't ambition, it's alignment. That's why Atlassian built the Teamwork Collection, an AI-powered teamwork platform designed to help teams move faster together. By connecting Jira, Confluence, Loom, and Rovo, teams can easily align work to real business goals, plan and track progress together, remove knowledge silos, and access the real magic of AI plus human collaboration. Visit Atlassian.com/teamchanger to learn more. That's Atlassian.com/teamchanger. On Masters of Scale, we talk a lot about inflection points, those moments when a technology stops being optional and starts being fundamental. AI presents one of those moments, and behind every breakthrough, whether it's medical research or education or even cinematic visual effects, there's infrastructure most people never see. As the essential cloud for AI, CoreWeave is building that foundation. It provides a purpose-built AI cloud designed specifically for pioneers at leading AI labs and enterprises, ready to power the biggest ideas and the boldest ambitions. Ready for anything, ready for AI. To learn more about how CoreWeave powers the world's best AI, go to coreweave.com/readyforanything.
A brand is the sum of the promises we make and the experiences we deliver. I think Cracker Barrel learned, hey, this is too core. We can't touch this. I give bravery and courage for saying, hey, we messed up this, but they've got to evolve. As a brand, when you're using AI, you want to be clear with your customers. And with J.Crew, because they weren't transparent, they kind of got called out. So trust was lost. Trust is earned in drops, but it's lost in buckets.
That's Dara Treseder, Chief Marketing Officer of Autodesk, recorded live at the Masters of Scale Summit in San Francisco on October 8th. In today's episode, we've combined two fast-paced segments from the summit. First, I talk with Dara about the highest-profile branding topics of 2025, getting her unvarnished read on Sydney Sweeney, Cracker Barrel, Taylor Swift, and more. Then in the second half of the episode, I talk with Flexport CEO Ryan Peterson about the five biggest myths around global trade and tariffs. Dara and Ryan are both uncommonly candid, including Ryan's advice about avoiding jail and what he calls, quote, dumb competition. So let's get to it. I'm Bob Safian, and this is Rapid Response. Please welcome the Chief Marketing Officer of Autodesk, Dara Treseder. We're going to do this chat in two parts. We're
going
to kind of play two different games. Okay, first, I'm going to take you through four topics in marketing and branding right now. And then we're literally going to play a fast-paced game called Buzzword Bingo.
Uh-oh.
Okay? All right. So are you ready?
Don't get me in trouble, Bob.
I know. I'll try. So we have some visuals for this first four. Okay? So first up, Sydney Sweeney's American Eagle ad.
Literally said, don't get me in trouble, Bob.
I know. No. So this ad, it sparked all kinds of controversy and discussion about, you know, genes versus genes. You and I talked before about what is healthy tension and toxic tension. So was this healthy tension, toxic tension? What does the reaction mean about where we are?
Well, first of all, we are here at Masters of Scale with some of the biggest leaders in the world, and we're talking about American Eagle. I know we're not shopping it. So I think they definitely check the tension box.
Uh-huh.
Was it healthy? Was it toxic? Let's talk about it. Let's dissect it. Healthy tension is tension that moves the brand and the business forward. Great work must always have tension. If it doesn't have tension, it's not great, and it's not causing conversation. Healthy tension, when it moves the brand and business forward, it goes beyond awareness to drive actual acquisition and business results. Sometimes you can have awareness, and instead of acquisition, you end up with alienation. Mm. So that is where, instead of it being healthy, it kind of goes into the toxic space. I think that they checked the box on tension, they raised awareness, but was it healthy? There was a lot of alienation. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't need a focus group to know that in this very polarized world that we are living in, when you use the word genes, and by genes I mean G-E-N-E-S, and then you show only one demographic, they're going to be people with thoughts, right? And there's going to be a lot of energy around that. You don't need to do a focus group or spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on research to get to that point. Now, so there were some people that felt alienated. Did the awareness overall drive acquisition? We don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think a good example of a brand that jumped into the conversation and drove awareness and acquisition is Gap. Right, they kind of had a counter ad with Cat's Eye, and that drove a lot of acquisition. And Gap sales on TikTok are through the roof. So that's an example of healthy tension.
Of using the tension.
Of using the tension in a healthy way to drive not just awareness, but acquisition. I think gone are the days where all publicity is good publicity. There's some publicity we just don't need. You know what I mean?
All right, let's try. Let's go to number two.
Bob!
So I know I'm making it difficult for you here, huh? All right, let me.
He said
let me,
we were gonna have fun.
Let me frame it this way. Right? Like when when Cracker Barrel fans responded to the removal of this old timer from the logo, right? They walked it back, and we've seen other brands backtrack, HBO walking back Max, right? So are there situations, do you know in the situations where it's like, this is a cultural conversation that I'm losing, I can't drive this conversation, versus like, I just made a mistake?
First of all, brands have a lot of power. Because when we have brands where we're having commentary from everybody, from the president to your hairdresser, you know you've touched a nerve. And what I will say is, as a brand, Cracker Barrel had been experiencing declining sales, right? That's why they said, what can we do to ignite or spark the next wave of growth for the business? So we have to give them kudos for saying, hey, we can't just keep going down the path we're going. We need to change something. Now, when you're evolving a brand, because you have to either adapt or you die as a brand, you have to evolve. So they got check, we need to evolve. Now, there's the heart of the brand or the soul of the brand. Because what is a brand at the end of the day? A brand is the sum of the promises we make and the experiences we deliver. That is what it is. It is the sum of the promises we make and the experiences we deliver. The soul or the heart of the brand is at the core of that. For Cracker Barrel, it's around that Southern hospitality and comfort. Okay? That is a non-negotiable. I think with the logo change, I mean, y'all can see the second logo. It's not exactly screaming Southern hospitality.
Well, it's not really screaming anything.
It's not
it's
screaming.
Pretty sanitized,
I mean,
right?
It could be Panera Bread. You
right.
know what I mean? Like, and so if you are someone who immediately you see this, you go to, this is changing Southern hospitality and comfort. So all of a sudden you start to question, what is this brand going to deliver? Mm. And so it affects the trust. Mm-hmm. With the customer, because you're evolving something that is too core. So I think Cracker Barrel learned, hey, this is too core. We can't touch this. Let's look at other things that we can evolve. So I'm going to give them kudos for actually saying, hey, we listened and we're going to not touch the heart or the soul of the brand. We will evolve something else. I don't actually think it's capitulation. I think it's smart. I think it's good stewardship of the brand. We're not in a perfect world. We're all going to make mistakes. I give bravery and courage for saying, hey, we messed up this, we're going to go back.
All right.
But they've got to evolve. So we're all going to be watching.
They got to make a choice,
yes,
right?
They got
to make a different choice. All right, let's go to the next one. J. Crew's AI generated ad. So this also sparked a lot of discussion. I know you're bullish about AI, and Autodesk's Flow Studio AI is used by a lot of creatives in the ad marketing community. How should folks think about using AI in their brands and their messages? You know, and what are the risks? What are the opportunities? How do you think about
that? So at Autodesk, our software is used to like design and make anything, right? Whether it's products you use and love, movies and games we all enjoy, or it is used to make buildings we live and work in. Now, we are bullish on AI, but we are also team human. We are AI in service of humanity and not the other way around. And I think that's really important. So I think brands get it right when you are clear about what AI is and what it is not. AI can help all of us. It lifts the floor, but it's actually human ingenuity that is going to raise the ceiling. So there is still a space for humans in this AI narrative. Now, where J. Crew, I think, got it wrong was they weren't transparent about what AI was driving. And there is fear around AI. And it's not just fear for the sake of fear, but it's fear around being manipulated or being disenfranchised. So as a brand, when you're using AI, you want to be clear with your customers and be transparent so that they understand you're not trying to manipulate them. You're just being clear. And you're also not trying to disenfranchise them. And with J. Crew, because they weren't transparent, they kind of got called out. Uh-huh. And they had to go back and edit the captions to show it was generated by AI. So trust was lost, right? Trust is earned in drops, but it's lost in buckets. So that transparency, I think, is important. And, you know, for example, at Autodesk, with Flow Studio, we are making sure we are clear that our AI is here to help creators, but creators are in control. It's like riding a tandem bike. The creator is deciding what direction we're going to go, how fast we're going to go. AI is simply helping, providing that additional horsepower by automating some tedious tasks like scene integration.
All right, let's. We're doing one more, and then we go to the game. All right.
This is already hard, so I'm wondering what's happening here.
I know. All right. So this is an image of the UK streetwear designer Tega Akinola. It's part of Autodesk's Let There Be Anything campaign. Partnerships are so important for brands right now. So how do brands associate and get the most authentic partnerships with creators, celebrities? Like how do we think about making sure you get the right choice so you get the right ROMI, the right return on marketing investment?
Yeah, show me the ROMI. Everything has to start with business impact. You know, you have to figure out how is this going to advance my brand objective and ultimately drive the results that I'm going for. So there are three key things you look at. First of all, is this an ad? It has to be an ad and a build. It should not be a detraction. And honestly, if it's going to be neutral, don't even do it. Do something else with your resources. So that ad and that build is really important. The second thing is you need to be pushing not just for reach, but also resonance. Because reach does not equal resonance. And you cannot compromise resonance for reach. Because if you're not getting both resonance and reach, you're ultimately not reaching that new target audience and you're not expanding your demographic to get the needed business results. I think the third thing is you have to make sure that whatever partnership you're doing, it fits into the bigger picture and is a force multiplier, not a force divider. Mm. So that's the third thing you need to look at. I think when you check those three boxes, whether you're working with the creator or it's a brand partnership, that's how you get to ROMI. And if you're thinking, what should the math be? I like to use a 1-to-3 ratio. So if I'm spending a dollar, I want to make sure that I'm making at least $3. If I'm not going to make $3, there might be a better investment for those resources.
All right. You ready for the game?
I'm scared.
All right. So these are buzzwords. I'm going to ask you overhyped or underhyped. Okay, you can give me a quick explanation if you want. We'll see how many we can get through in 3 minutes. Can you put 3 minutes on the clock? There should be a clock up there. All right. Ready?
All right.
All right. Number one, return to office mandates.
Appropriately hyped.
Appropriately hyped. Good or bad? All right.
It's good. I think we like to spend time in person. There is a space for in-person intentional gatherings and experiences.
TikTok's algorithm.
As a marketer, I think it's underhyped because you can reach a lot of people and drive a lot of results. As a mom, it is overhyped. Those kids need to get off TikTok, go outside, drink water, touch the grass.
All right, Apple's brand power.
Underhyped.
Underhyped.
Yes, many tech brands right now, there is no trust. Apple's one of the few brands that people say, how many people y'all using an iPhone? Who's using an iPhone? Look at that. Look, a sea of Apple people. There you go.
All right. Tilly Norwood and the Velvet Sundown. You guys know them? They're AI artists.
They're overhyped. I'm team human, okay? So overhyped. Human ingenuity is still going to be needed. I don't think we're ever going to get to a world where it's just AI taking over. I mean, I don't want to live in that world.
Shein and Temu.
Overhyped. I'm a sustainability queen.
All right. Next year's World Cup in North America.
Underhyped. Yay, USA. I'm excited. Woo! World Cup LA 28. Autodesk, we're the official design and make platform, so I do have to say that.
All right, here we go. Taylor Swift's power.
So I think appropriately hyped. Everybody's talking about Taylor Swift. Look, I love my man too. And if anyone was going to listen to my music, nobody does. I would also be writing an ode to him. So look, appropriately hyped. Tell you who is underhyped is Tree Payne, her publicist. Give it up for Tree Payne. And also Travis Kelce's also underhyped. We like a man who supports his powerful, ambitious wife.
Right on. All right, Ryan Reynolds' business exploits.
He's underhyped. That man does everything from whiskey to Deadpool. Underhyped. I also work with him.
Labubu love.
Overhyped. Too many in my house. I'm like, what is happening? I'm teaching my children about hoarding. We can't hoard Labubus.
Meta's AR glasses.
I think today it might be overhyped, but I think tomorrow it's going to be underhyped. They're still figuring out the use cases, but I'm bullish on it.
All right. Netflix's dominance?
Underhyped. K-pop demon hunters have taken over my... We're going up, up! Like, it's...
All right. We're almost at the end of our time. Late night TV hosts?
Underhyped. God bless the late night TV hosts.
All right. I think that's... all right, last one. Pumpkin spice.
Underhyped. Get your pumpkin spice while you can.
Dara,
Starbucks, let us have it all the time.
Dara, thank you.
Thank you so much.
I have to thank Dara for being willing to play the buzzword game and to take on some of the trickiest topics in marketing. Dara makes it all sound fun and shares important insights about positioning any business or brand. Coming up next, we're going to switch topics to global trade and tariffs. The mood of candor will persist, courtesy of Flexport CEO Ryan Peterson. That's after the break. Stay with us.
Hey folks, Jeff Berman here. Exciting news. Applications are now open for the Masters of Scale Summit. It's happening October 20th through October 22nd in San Francisco, and it is a really special event. Please join our curated community of founders, innovators, and leaders shaping the future. Expect ideas that challenge your assumptions and connections that move your business and maybe even your life forward. It's an experience that can change literally everything. Apply now at mastersofscale.com/apply26. That's mastersofscale.com/apply26.
While everyone was debating whether or not Bitcoin was an asset for their portfolio, CoinShares was quietly building the foundation to invest in it properly. CoinShares launched the world's first Bitcoin ETP back in 2015. Today, they manage nearly $6 billion and are profitable through multiple market cycles. CoinShares is publicly traded on NASDAQ Stockholm and announced in September it is seeking a U.S. listing. CoinShares is the one-stop shop for digital asset investment, passive ETFs, active strategies, and mining exposure. Every approach built to institutional standards. CoinShares. The adults have arrived. Learn more at coinshares.com. This is Zeb Farbman, co-founder and CEO of Lightrix, a technology company that creates AI-powered video models and tools.
Most of our research was along the border between computer graphics and image processing, and We thought that if we pair our expertise with this new platform, we will be able to create new tools and new creative experiences that no one did before.
But when the generative AI boom disrupted everything, Lightrix seized the moment with a new burst of innovation. They created LTX2, an open source AI model enabling its users to generate high quality video content, giving them full creative control from concept to delivery on one platform.
I think a lot of the values that we took from academia reflect how we are thinking about our models. We want them to be open. We want a collaborative environment. And we really, really care about efficiency. We always believe deep research is the key to unlocking a competitive advantage and building cool things. It's even more important during the age of AI.
Start creating today with LTX2 at ltx.studio.
Before the break, we heard Autodesk's Dara Treseder live at the Masters of Scale Summit break down the biggest marketing and branding lessons of the year. Now we switch gears to Flexport CEO Ryan Peterson, also recorded live, who assesses five major myths about global trade and tariffs. Let's dive back in. So, Ryan, I have created five myths for us. These are things that are based on sort of what I'm hearing from different folks in the business community. I'm going to go through them. I'd love your perspective on them. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
So myth number one is don't act on tariff announcements too quickly. Policy could shift again. I remember you telling me about customs border protection, finding out about changes like on Truth Social. Like, things just keep changing.
We have a Supreme Court case that's coming down the pipeline, and it may actually, all the tariffs might just get refunded. And we'll find that out in the next couple of months. And then, by the way, for sure, the administration will claim that as a victory because the stock market's going to go way up. And they'll go, look.
We did it again. But like, when you're talking to clients, do they like, yeah, we got to do things. We don't have to do things.
Sometimes the best thing is to do nothing. You might say that's actually an action. It could be a radical action to just say, hey, we're going to stay calm. Some changes in supply chain take many years to play out. Like if you're going to move your production to a new country, we've seen this where people said, oh, okay, China doesn't work. We're going to set up production in India. And then, well, it turns out the tariffs on India are just as high as on China right now. So it's very difficult to make long-term decisions in a policy environment that changes so quickly.
Are they looking over their shoulder at each other and saying, like, what's that one doing? Should I be doing that? What can I do differently?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. It's been very interesting. So we're a customs brokerage. We help companies figure out what duties they owe and pay them. And it's a really complex world, as you can imagine. There's every variety of product out there. And I'm used to being the expert when I talk to my customers. But now, you know, the CEOs, they have to know their product at a level that I don't know every single product and every rule. And I'm just like a smile and nod, like, yeah, yeah, that's been really tough for us to be at that forefront, trying to monitor what's happening, you know, and interpret it for our customers and figure out, give them advice. What decision should you make?
Let's move to myth number two. The government has a plan. Don't worry. They know what they're doing. Everything's going to turn out great.
It's difficult to say. I think there's maybe a plan. I don't know if it's a good plan. The reality is there's actually some pretty good reasons for us to be concerned about the lack of industrial production in the United States. And one of the problems in life, though, is you get a bunch of people in a room and say, hey, we got this problem. We got to do something. They're going to do something.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't always mean they're going to do the right thing. Or like, you know, yes, tariffs may actually be an effective way to stimulate manufacturing. The way they've been done so far, actually, I've met more companies that are removing, like shifting production offshore as a result of the tariffs, because mm-hmm. you have to pay duties on the components that are coming in and on the machinery that you use.
So these sort of unintended consequences,
yes,
second order impacts, maybe.
Difficult. Economies aren't meant to be centrally planned.
All right, let's move to number three, myth number three. China's in a better position to adapt to trade volatility than the U.S. And I'll have to say that I've heard this exactly the opposite way, too. I almost wrote this the other way,
yeah,
that the U.S. is in a better position to adapt to trade volatility than China is.
Which is actually very illustrative that you could have written it both ways. and it does illustrate, yeah. You know, the trade is a positive sum scenario. Both parties do trade because they're both made better off by doing it. And this idea that you can win a trade war is sort of inherently is wrong. I mean, you win a trade war by just not having one and doing trade and both parties, you know. So it is, that said, the United States does depend on global trade less than China does. We're self-sufficient in food and energy, and they're not. And that's a big deal. They import, I think, 80% of their energy. They import a lot of food from around the world. So if you're talking about like subsistence level, who's going to survive in a terrible situation? Like, we do depend less on trade. But that said, yeah, I think both parties are going to lose.
You have a lot of communications, as you say, with CEOs here. Is there communication or information that you're getting from contacts in China about how the trade war is impacting things there that maybe we're not seeing as much?
The thing that we're seeing actually, and it's not just China related, you see this on a global basis, is when you jack up duty rates the way we have, you just create this huge incentive for fraud.
For fraud?
Yeah, for cheating. And it's quite simple what's happening, and it's happening in mass. We're actually spending a lot of time in D.C. trying to help them understand how this happens. The United States is the only country in the world, the only major country in the world that allows foreign companies to import goods into the country without any kind of legal entity, physical presence, employees, bank account, nothing. You just, as a foreign company, fill out this form and you just get approved and you can start importing from overseas. Then you just misdeclare. You say the products are worth $10,000 when they're worth $100,000. You just reduce your duty rate by 90%. And it's very difficult for customs. We don't have enforcement agents in other countries for trade compliance. We do for terrorism, for drugs, but not for trade compliance.
Because it hasn't been worth it.
Yes, exactly. And now the incentive is there. So I suspect there's probably going to be some kind of, there's a bill in the Senate that's being talked about, and maybe executive order, we'll see, to make it much more difficult for this type of fraud. But it's not China specific. I think this is like anyone in the world. If you're in a foreign country,
you can take advantage of this.
Don't do that, by the way. And if you're an American company that's buying from those people on those terms and they're importing for you, you are committing fraud. And I only have one rule in life, is I'm never going to jail. I don't have the personality for it, you know? So.
If you don't come away with anything from this event, remember that.
It's not worth it.
Don't go to jail. All right, let's go to myth number four. The trade industry itself is struggling to keep up with the times. I remember you telling me a story about a Long Beach taco truck story.
The trade industry is it's an old industry. They sometimes call it the world's second oldest profession. And we all want to be data-driven in this world. But the problem with data is it all comes from the same place, which is the past. Uh-huh. And when the future looks different from the past, all that expertise and experience actually might serve you wrong. You might be bad at responding to these circumstances. You might, and I push my team a lot, because when a new rule comes out, people turn to the experts to understand what it means. I'm like, well, they're just going to read the thing. You could also read the thing yourself and right. Get in there. And I think some of that bad habits that form is people just rely on experts instead of going to do it yourself and go learn. And so you see a lot of cases like this. So for one really interesting example, maybe it's too nerdy for you guys or too industry deep dive, but if you take, we have these new duties that are on steel and aluminum, and it's based on the percent of the value of the product that's made up of steel and aluminum, which is the first time, I think in my knowledge, the first time that duties have been done this way. Duties in the past have always been done based on the classification of the product. And so each product gets a tariff code based on what its classification is. Now it's that plus based on a percent of steel and aluminum composition. And this is a simple thing, by the way. We could do the math at the whiteboard and like to figure this out in 30 seconds.
But the industry doesn't have.
It is totally broken down. Big parts of our industry, they can't calculate. First of all, you have to track the data. That's kind of hard. What is the percent of steel and aluminum? Nobody knows. They didn't track that before.
Right.
That part's kind of hard. But once you have that, just stack it on top and you do the math. Well, our software engineers built this in 3 days. Built this calculator. The entire industry is using our calculator and acting like it's God's gift. You're like, this is three engineers built this in 3 days. Like, it shouldn't be that hard.
Well, sometimes the older an industry is, the harder it is to adapt to technology that makes things easier. Not that a calculator maybe may not be the most.
The key to success is dumb competition sometimes.
Another thing to remember. choose in the industry an opportunity
and
where
the key
your
to failure
competition
is. But the more we cause a failure is arrogance, so I got to be careful.
Let's do myth number five here. You know, this I hear constantly. Buckle up. We've entered a new era of trade. It's never before seen. This is a whole different game.
That I do think is a myth, although this is my opinion. You know, I mean, a lot of people believe this and it could be true. But I look at, I love history. I'm a history buff. I read like a history book every single week, basically. And if you look at the long run of global trade, first off, tariffs have been here forever. Some of the oldest, basically, numbers were invented to calculate tariffs. Like, that's why we have math, is so you can figure out how much you owe the Lord. So this has been around for a long, long time. It's like the primary form. Governments were funded off tariffs for most of human history. Some of the big progress that we made was breaking down these barriers to trade, like national unification in Europe, France. Like, they used to have a tariff every time you crossed to the next, the next count or whatever, to the next property over, you had to pay tariffs, and they kind of got rid of that and created countries. But the borders of countries have almost always had tariffs. We're in a relatively unique era that we've had since World War II or so, or since Bretton Woods, that you've had low tariff barriers. But coming, they'll go up and down. I don't think that's dramatically different. But one thing you do see in the long run of history, you talk about 1,000 years of history, really since the Mongol invasions, you've had 4% annual growth of trade. And 4% growth doesn't sound like much for those of us here in Silicon Valley, but when you put it on a 1,000-year trajectory, it looks like a hockey stick. In fact, I plotted this, and it looks like a hockey stick curve of exponential growth on a logarithmic graph. And so it's very rare you see a hockey stick that's a hyper-exponential function. It looks like a straight line up. And we've had all kinds of disruptions in that period. If you may not be aware of things like the Black Death and the 30 Years' War and World War II.
Globalization, trade keeps moving.
Kept growing, and all of those things are way worse than, like, you know, a couple presidents not getting along with each other. So I think you'll see, my prediction, 10 years from now, there'll be more trade, not less, but we'll see.
And that means for those of us who are running businesses that are engaged in trade, don't rush too fast to reweigh the way you're thinking about things?
Hopefully you'll get a big refund in 2 months and we're having a party. So.
Well, Ryan, this has been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ryan's insider view of trade and tariffs is refreshing, and not just because he calls some of his competition dumb. Ryan's insights about the changing nature of trade echoes what's going on in other disrupted industries, that we can get distracted by the noise and miss the bigger picture. Like Dara Treseder at Autodesk in the first part of this episode, Ryan breaks through the conventionality that marks much of business dialogue to address unspoken truths. We'll share several more unconventional conversations from the Masters of Scale Summit here on Rapid Response, including an exploration of character with retired U.S. general and leadership icon Stanley McChrystal, and a dynamic round-robin exchange about the shifting nature of venture capital and entrepreneurship, featuring our own Reid Hoffman of Greylock Partners and the investor who coined the phrase unicorn for billion-dollar companies. You can also catch up with videos from the Masters of Scale Summit on YouTube via the Rapid Response and Masters of Scale channels. I'm Bob Safian. Thanks for listening.
AI breakthroughs are quickly reshaping every industry around the world. Healthcare, education, science, entertainment, and beyond. But true global scale only happens when the underlying infrastructure can maintain pace with the rapid speed of innovation. As the essential cloud for AI, CoreWeave is a purpose-built cloud made for the real demands of today's most complex AI models, bringing the pace, performance, and partnership leading pioneers need to continue pushing boundaries. Ready for anything? Ready for AI. To learn more about how CoreWeave powers the world's best AI, go to coreweave.com/readyforanything.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt. My podcast, Search Engine, has a new two-part series for you. Of all the new technologies coming out of AI, the most transformative one might be driverless cars. They're already on the road in 10 American cities, and they're quickly coming to more. We tell the story of how we got here. The secret team at Google that spent 15 years building what might be the safest vehicle on the road. And we cover the fights brewing in blue cities, where unions and politicians are working to keep those cars off the streets. Listen to Search Engine wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, folks, if you enjoyed our recent episode with my friend Matt Abrahams, the brilliant author and academic has his own podcast, Think Fast, Talk Smart. Twice a week, the Stanford lecturer sits down with experts to discuss their best advice to hone and develop your communication skills. Learn to stress less about public speaking, make more meaningful small talk, and much more. You'll always get science-backed strategies and actionable tips you can use right away. And Matt is just a fantastic guy. You're going to love having him in your ear. Listen to Think Fast, Talk Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Rapid Response is a Wait What original. I'm Bob Safian. Our executive producer is Eve Troe. Our producer is Alex Morris. Associate producer is Mashumaku Tonina. Mixing and mastering by Aaron Bastinelli. Our theme music is by Ryan Holiday. Our head of podcasts is Lital Malad. For more, visit rapidresponseshow.com.